Hello, my name is Nikki Toyamasito, and I'm the Executive Director of Christians for Social Action, and your host for today's episode of 20 Minute Takes. On this episode, we speak with Kristen Komarnicki. She's the Senior Director of Dialogue at Christians for Social Action and runs the Oriented to Love program. She joins us today to talk about the importance of dialogue for those who are seeking justice and shares with us new and hopeful ways that we might be able to step into the gap and the different fissures that we see in society today. Join us for this episode of 20 Minute Takes. Hi, Kristen. Thank you so much for joining us today on 20 Minute Takes.
Thanks for having me, Nikki.
Okay, Kristen, I just have to say, the place where you are in is an extraordinary place. Can you just describe a little bit about the place where you live and work?
Sure. I live in a carriage house from the late 1800s in Philadelphia. So it would have been essentially the barn for a big, beautiful house, which is still there, but it's now divided into six apartments. So my kitchen is actually the former horse stalls. Uh-huh. And it's the cool thing about it is the ceilings are very high. Our bedroom is in the hayloft. And there's just a lot of history, and all the original hardware is left. So like the sliding doors,
the stable.
Yeah, all the hardware and the solid wood and the kinds of materials we just don't see in buildings today. So yeah, it's fun.
It also feels like a curated space. You have so many art and trinkets. Are your walls a memory book, or do you feel like it's more of a museum?
Oh, I hope it's a memory book. Yeah. My husband's from France. We lived in Hong Kong for 8 years. We lived in Canada. We've traveled around the world, and we've had friends who have traveled, and we've just collected things that we love. So yeah, it's more of a memory book than a museum. Sounds kind of stodgy.
It feels curated too, though. I love that, though. Your space, even when I see you sometimes, it's just, I feel more creative.
Yeah, there are no blank walls here.
Well, I wanted to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us, because of an extraordinary experience I had. I just wanted to talk to you about it. I was in Long Beach, and I came to something that you hosted called a fishbowl. And I walked into this church, or kind of a rather large church. I think there were maybe 250 people in the room from a whole ton of different churches, I think, from the area. I don't think they were just from that church. And so I walk into this room, and on the stage is about like six or seven folks. And the night felt like an experience where we got to sort of eavesdrop on this extraordinary conversation. Like I felt like we were sort of peeking over the shoulder. And it was a conversation like I've never had or seen. And to be honest, that my heart kind of longs for in this sort of divided society that we have. It was a conversation about LGBTQ Christians, human sexuality, and the church. And it felt like the folks you had having that conversation represented every combination, and some of them rather surprising. Like I think there was maybe a gentleman who had sort of a conservative view on gay marriage, but was maybe the parent of a child who had come out. Some folks were sort of conservative in their leaning. There were folks who represented everything across gay, heterosexual. There's a trans woman there. So it's like an extraordinary combination of sort of every hot button issue. And yet the conversation was this one of like listening and understanding or curiosity. What in the world did you do? Like, why, what makes it hard to have those kinds of conversations in other places? And what is it that you did to foster that sort of listening and engagement and curiosity across huge difference?
Yes. So I think one of your earlier questions was, why don't we have these conversations sort of out in the wild? And I think one of the reasons that is that people tend to cluster according to their beliefs.
Oh, that's totally me. I mean, I think that's what I, yeah. Okay.
Right. So what Oriented to Love does, and of course, all of these people that I invited to be part of that conversation have been through an Oriented to Love dialogue, which means that they have an experience of preparing for, intentionally approaching a dialogue across deep difference. So okay. That's one thing. These aren't just people that I just grabbed off the street. Right? These are people that have been walked through and have entered into with a willingness to be brave and mutually vulnerable, uh-huh. an experience of dialogue over a weekend. Oh, and wow. So that has really formed them.
Yes.
And even though most of the people in the fishbowl that you witnessed had not met each other ahead yes. of time, they had that common
they
experience.
They didn't know each other at all.
A few did, but no, yeah. but several of them had never
I
met each other.
Would not have known that. Okay.
Yeah. So, so I think that's really important that they've had this visceral lived experience of it's okay for us to lean across our difference. Mm-hmm. If everybody has the same agreement, which is we're going to listen mm-hmm. With love. We're going to, the goal is to understand mm-hmm. and the goal is to come as a learner in the posture of learner as opposed to teacher, which I think the evangelical church teaches us very well to be teachers, you know, proclaimers of truth, but not as well just to sit at each other's feet and say, what do you have to offer me? What do I have to learn from you? I don't have all the answers. So there was already a shared spirit okay. that came from having that shared experience.
Yes.
And of course, when you plan an event, you can handpick people to represent a number of lived experiences, whether yes. that's theological, uh-huh. According to your sexual orientation or your gender identity.
Yes.
And so, you know, one of my goals is to help people see that there is no monolithic gay person, that LGBTQ has a lot of letters, and that's and in each of those letters is just represents so much diversity in and of itself. So, I just want to help people see that if you've met one gay person, you've met one gay person, or if you've met one trans person, you've met one trans person, and see what happens when we come together in our uniqueness and our unique lived experience and listen to each other well.
Yeah. Well, I think that was really extraordinary because it also felt to me like a picture of what it should be like that Christians of anyone ought to be able to have some of these tougher conversations. All of those folks sort of are Jesus followers.
Yes,
okay. And it seems that within the church, we have, you know, sort of this boundedness to following Jesus that it ought to help us. But why do you think it seems like it's actually harder sometimes for Christians to engage across either theological difference or if they've reached different conclusions about different things. Is there something that does make it a little harder for Christians when it seems to me like we, you know, we're supposed to be sort of family across the globe?
Hmm. Yes. I think because like sexuality and gender, actually, our spirituality is so core to who we are. Mm. It's so intimate.
Yeah.
And so our beliefs are very tied to our view of ourselves, our identity. Mm. So, you know, you've heard it said, oh, the Bible clearly says. and then you look at centuries, millennia of contrasting interpretation, right? Depending on culture, depending on, you know, the Jewish scholarship, Christian scholarship, global scholarship. I mean, there are just so many different ways of looking at the Bible. So, uh-huh. but if our mindset is the Bible clearly says, or this is what it means to be a Christian, then we will have trouble interacting with people who believe differently because
yes.
to entertain your view, for example, Nikki, if you hold a different view, actually invites you to question or threaten my sense of identity.
Mm.
And so, yeah, that makes it very complicated for people. Or it's just, you know, if I open myself up, that means to Nikki's point of view, then I may be wrong on this. And that means that my grandmother was wrong. My entire family, my whole denomination, you know, mm-hmm. so it's just, it feels very unsettling. very disorienting when we allow space to consider other views.
So then is the fishbowl there to sort of break people's stereotypes and bring them to a particular conclusion?
It's definitely not to bring them to a conclusion other than that there are many ways to follow Jesus, because my goal is to show that each of these people, although they disagree in many ways and have very different life experiences, all do cherish their faith and their walk with Christ. And so it's really to help people take a big inhale and then a big exhale and say, okay, I might not understand. This might make me a little uncomfortable, but I can't really deny that this person loves God or is seeking to follow Christ. Mm. And so that is, if that happens at a fishbowl, I find that that's a big win. Just to complicate the narrative. That's one of my favorite phrases right now. We need to complicate the narratives that we tell ourselves, which are very fixed often.
Yeah. I think it was the other thing that was sort of impressive to me is I sort of feel like there's kind of a Christian nice group think that kind of happens when you have groups. And I didn't, you know, kind of this like, oh, let's just agree on what we can agree on. And I think the thing that I found so, it was kind of refreshing, is it's not like people were trying to change each other's minds. And people still like retained a lot of distinctives. Like the people left that stage with still strongly held convictions. And at the same time, I think there was a kindness in that conversation. I don't know. So I think I just felt like there was a lot of ingredients that I just don't see come together at once. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, just that the niceness, first of all, that is my least favorite word in the dictionary.
Oh, no, nice. Is that right?
Well, no, you use it. You used it the way I understand it, because this Christian niceness, really, it's an agreement to, it's a tacit agreement to lie to each other or to hide parts of ourselves, right? Yeah. So we always say at Orientis to Love, we say we're not coming together in spite of our differences. We're coming together because of our differences. Uh-huh. And at a dialogue, we actually highlight those, or at a fishbowl, we highlight those because they can be so instructive. So I think that's important. I also, here's a quote I just read yesterday. Monica Guzman is a journalist, a Latina journalist based in Seattle, and she's written a beautiful book called I've Never Thought of It That Way. And I heard this great quote. She said, people who are underrepresented in our lives are overrepresented in our imaginations.
Oh, fascinating.
And that ties in with what I was saying. Like, if you don't have a chance, if in your normal circles you're not going to meet a gay person who lives into celibacy, or a gay person who's married to their same-sex partner, or a transgender person, then you are going to have all kinds of ideas that you've imagined about that person. Because they're underrepresented in their in your life. So yeah. I just thought that was a really interesting insight.
No, that is. That's super interesting. How is it that you got involved? What got you started on this journey that you're sort of, I feel like you're sort of a guide leading communities of people through a similar journey. Like, what kicked it off for you?
Oh my goodness, such a broken, tripping guide, because these are hard, they're hard conversations. I have all the same feelings about conflict and difference as everybody else does. Maybe more than many people, because I'm very empathic. I mean, I got started technically because our boss at the time, Ron Sider, said, you should put something like this together, because I was saying, you know, I'm not really comfortable talking about how gay people should live if we don't have any gay people on staff, for example. And I said, at the very least, we should convene some sort of a dialogue to get to know the people we're talking about. And that was like this magical moment where everything sort of crystallized. I just remember everybody sort of tilting their heads and thinking, well, that makes sense. And then Ron saying, put something like that together, with a little wave of his hand. And little did I know that a program was born that day, you know?
No kidding. So this came out of like a listening session I feel like so many organizations put together those like listening sessions, but they don't necessarily turn into programs 10 plus years later.
Yeah. Honestly, it was just a Holy Spirit thing.
Yeah.
And what I've learned and what got me sort of addicted to this work, you know, I did one, I did two, but what really got me hooked was that the Christian queer community are modeling loving dialogue across deep difference. They have got it.
Interesting.
And I think it's because their shared experience of rejection by the church, and they know how hard, one, their theological understandings are, whether they are traditional in their sexual ethic or progressive, the terms that seem to be most common. They love each other well. They listen to each other well across deep difference. In my experience, I know I'm in some unique settings, but they have taught me so much about the beauty of leaning towards each other in a posture of listening and learning. So I'm hooked.
Why do you think it's important for Christians who care about justice to press into dialogue?
Do you think
it's important for Christians who care about justice to,
strengthen
this dialogue? Yeah.
I think dialogue is absolutely foundational to justice work, because if we are not willing to listen to the people we're trying to help, for example, the people we're fighting for justice on behalf, the people even within our own, I hate the word faction, but even within our own sort of interest group who might see things differently than we do, then how are we going to advance justice for all? How is it ever going to look like love? How is it going to smell good to the world itself? And the problem is, it's slow work. Dialogue is really slow work because it requires us to take a beat, to prepare, to move with intention towards the other who we don't understand, to do the deep relational work that bubbles up underneath that is so essential to how we express our witness in the world. And so people just want a set of tools. You know, I get people calling all the time like, okay, I need you to come in here and do a quick workshop, 5 tools for better dialogue. And I always say it's not really possible, because I could mention 5 things, but those are going to stir up 5 deep wells of challenge within you. So plan for this process over a year with your congregation or your organization. We can start the conversation, but plan for it to take time because it's deep work.
No, that's totally true. I could see that. It's deep work. It's kind of like a posture change or like an approach change. And I feel like, especially I will say that with an accent mark on kind of activists or doers, like, right, they're looking for impact or change, because the work of justice is so, you know, like 2 steps forward, 1 step back. So I can see where it feels like sort of a luxury to deepen on that. But I was in a group and someone had mentioned, and this was, I think, a parallel to some of the work that you're doing, is that kind of in the racial justice work, when you're doing sort of awareness training and cross-cultural skills building, that the fade-off on that training is actually pretty quick, within a couple of weeks, that part of actually what you need to do is both have the training, but to be in the context of a community or a longer journey, such that when the crisis happens, that gives you the opportunity to sort of engage with it differently, because in crisis, right, we always default to whatever posture or approach is sort of easiest for us or whatever. So,
yes, that's extremely important. And that's another beautiful gift that we have through Oriented to Love, because the alum community is really community. That's the community I pull from when it's time to put on a fishbowl for an organization. That's the community I pull from when someone's approaching a dialogue and feeling very anxious and they need what we call a big sib from the dialogue community. That's the community I pull from for writing and for mentorship and for ongoing training for myself. So it's huge. Huge. And they want to give back. They want to keep deepening those relationships. So
yeah,
it's beautiful.
Well, that's fantastic. You know, Kristen, the other thing that kind of struck me was how racially diverse that conversation was. And it made me sort of reflect back on how, you know, gender roles or expectations or sexuality or like concepts around that are actually really, really specific or intertwined to people and their either the racial background or like the countries that they come from, or even the, I think, the region of this country where people are.
Oh, absolutely. I think that the culture we've been raised in, whether our family culture, our ethnic culture, our racially influenced culture absolutely impacts some of these stories. We, a couple of years ago, began doing BIPOC-only dialogues with...
Okay, so that's for like racial minorities...
Right. It's all people of color, no white people, to provide a space where Christians of color and various sexual orientations and gender identities could gather and dialogue away from the white gaze, because we found that there was a need for those spaces. You know, we never talk about safety. We don't guarantee safety. We invite people to brave space. Mm. But feedback we get is that it's very important to have that kind of space away from the white gaze to explore some of these other parts of people's identities.
Is there something that you're hoping the church will sort of receive as a gift through the fishbowl, through the dialogue work? Is there sort of something that you would love to highlight or put an accent mark for the church to notice and to receive as a gift or a spark of hope or inspiration?
I definitely hope that they experience hope lived out, you know, modeled, demonstrated. Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, I think there's such a beauty in the tenderness of watching two people or a small group of people, like at a fishbowl, listen to and communicate and share vulnerably across difference. It's such a tenderness. I think people sense a sweetness there. And many people say, wow, I was in church today. That's church.
Yes. Yeah.
As opposed to so much of what church is, which can feel like a performance, a lecture, a musical selection, which are all great things. But there's something that happens during those events that is relational and that is tender and gets at the heart of what I think the gospel is calling us to when Jesus says, may they be one, just as you and
yes.
I are one.
Yeah.
We yearn for it and we just don't see it very often. And so to help people get a tiny taste of that, I think is giving them the gift of hope.
That's powerful. As you were talking, it totally reminded me of a section in Ephesians that talks about the unity of the body of Christ is the thing that testifies to the powers and principalities about the power of Jesus and Jesus's death and resurrection. And I think we kind of give that sort of unity that they may be one a little bit of like, oh, that's sort of like a nice poster thing, but it's actually a little bit more powerful. I think that yes. we give it credit for.
And it's not about agreement, right? It's about doing that deep relational work. It's about making mistakes and then forgiving each other and doing life together. It's not just everybody's happy, shiny, and in agreement.
Yeah. Well, Kristen, thank you so much for joining us today on this episode of 20 Minute Takes. I really appreciate the work that you're doing.
You're welcome.
Minute Takes is a production of Christians for Social Action. Our music was created by Andre Henry, and this episode was mixed and engineered by Willoza Media. If you like this episode, spread the word by subscribing, reviewing, or sharing. I'm your host, Nikki Toyama-Sito. If you want to find out more about our work, visit the website at christiansforsocialaction.org.